This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today we are joined by special guest Sally Cooper, who's joining us not straight off her role as a BBC presenter, but a few days later. Welcome to the Jodcast once again.
Hello.
And you've been on here before as a role as a pulsar hunter.
Yeah, I think when I was interviewed before, I just found two pulsars, my first two pulsars.
And now you're getting the British public to do it for you.
I am indeed.
So you've been involved in stargazing live in a really special way this year. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to?
Yeah, so I, as along with a lot of the Manchester people, were involved with the sort of science behind the pulsar hunters. So my involvement was preparing the data that we were going to put onto the website, as well as when the website went live, there was a group of us who were looking at all of the classifications that the public had made.
So this is all for the Pulsar Hunter project, which is a Zooniverse project. Presumably you've been planning this for quite a while before the live episode started. When did you first start thinking that searching for pulsars was something that could be done with the public?
There's one problem with searching for pulsars. Well, there are many problems, but one of them is the number of candidates that we get. So doing a survey, such as the one of the main ones I'm involved with, which is with LOFAR, the Low Frequency Array in the Netherlands, is that for one pointing on the sky, we get 20,000 candidates. Now, if you times that by the number of pointings on the sky, we're talking millions of candidates.
And is the pointing the area in the sky? That's...
The pointing is, yeah, the sort of the beam on the sky.
That the telescope is pointed at.
Yeah. For LOFAR, we actually create 222 beams on the sky. So from those, we get around 20,000 candidates.
Per pointing?
Yes.
Wow.
So what do you mean by candidate?
So a candidate is just a repeating signal.
Obviously, you're searching for repeating signals because pulsars, by nature, repeat over
exactly.
A certain time period.
Yeah.
So what's involved for you as a pulsar hunter in going through these candidates and actually picking out real pulsars? And what kind of things can contaminate that process?
So this is the problem, is that there are, say, millions of candidates per survey. And from each candidate, you can look at various different features belonging to that candidate. So one of them might be the pulse profile.
And the pulse profile is what pulsar hunters were seeing.
Yeah, and then the other plot below that on the website was phase versus time, which is how consistent the signal was throughout time.
And you want it to be very consistent throughout time, is that right? It has to be...
Yeah, because a pulsar is really stable, the period of a pulsar is really stable. You want it to be appearing at the same point in the phase.
At every time.
At every time.
And then you'll see a dark stripe, which is what people were looking for.
Cool. So this, a signature pulsar would look like two bright peaks in the profile, which refers to the two phases, and then also two what I call sort of tram lines, which are the two vertical lines in the phase versus time plot.
So you had all of these millions of candidates for the survey. How many were you getting through on your own? How did you sit down and look through them?
Originally, pulsar surveys began with people just viewing them by eye, which is how I also began. But then you get into the realm of millions of candidates, and this becomes completely not feasible for a single PhD student to do in their, PhD lifetime.
Yeah.
So one thing is that humans are really good at picking out features by eye, but as I said, it's difficult for one person to do that. So what we moved to doing was applying machine learning techniques to these candidates, and they can give us a very good filter. They can remove a lot of at least the noise, but the problem with telescopes in the modern world is that they're normally in RFI environments, radio frequency can disturb the signal.
So what examples of things get in your way that you notice on a regular basis? Can you look at a thing and say that's a microwave? Well, that's an aeroplane.
So microwaves have definitely cropped up. You might have heard about them. Peritons might have been discussed on the Jodcast before.
The bane of my life.
Yeah. But specific to the data set that was on pulsar hunters, there is radar that is near to the Effelsberg radio telescope. And so you can imagine radar signal
radio.
Be easily picked up by a radio telescope.
And it's periodic.
and is periodic. So this is the problem. This is the problem why RFI is particularly worse than, say, just noise, is that RFI is periodic and can mimic the signature of a pulsar very well.
Can you get rid of some RFI but keep that instance of data so that you don't have to throw it away when it's been contaminated?
So one big difference between RFI and pulsars is that pulsars are generally broadband, which means they show up at a range of frequencies. So similar to the time phase plot that was on the website, there's also a frequency phase plot, and you're looking for a similar signature of two tram lines, so it's consistent with frequency. Whereas RFI tends to be narrow band, and so you only see it at a specific frequency. So it's quite easy to see that by eye and throw away those candidates. And that's what we'd ideally like a classifier to be able to do, is say pulsars but definitely aren't, and those that are, look like pulsars and may potentially turn out to be new discoveries.
And then you slot in the humans to do the final analysis with that.
Yeah, so normally when you apply some sort of classifier, you want to filter out all of the noise, and then you're left with only candidates that are predicted to be positive, and then they normally go on for visual inspection by a human as the very end process.
So what you're essentially doing with Pulsar Zoo was using the public as a human classifier for pulsars.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of applying, say, an algorithm to look for features to maybe separate the data, we instead used humans, which I believe Brooke will talk about. But the way that we use that basically is that you take one candidate, and say 50 people might classify this on the web page. 10 of them might say, no, this is rubbish. But the other 40 might say, yes, this is a pulsar. And therefore you get a score based on the voting, the classification of those people. And then you can take all of those classifications and make a ranked list. Us, as the science team behind it at Manchester, we just acquired this list of classifications. And then we would just check whether these candidates were worthwhile for follow-up.
And we were going through that manually the day after and the day after and the day after.
Yeah, we were strong-armed into it. Everyone was strong-armed into it.
Very little sleep. Everybody else's research had to be paused to fill in colossal spreadsheets. What was the overall result of these endeavours?
Yes, thank you for that, for your involvement.
You're welcome.
I think the whole team here at Manchester, well, everybody was actually located in different places, so I speak generally of Manchester. But the science team basically were taking this list of candidates and taking what the public could see on the web page was just a simplified version of the full candidate, so that the top few ranked ones, we would check the full version of this candidate, by which I mean some of the extra data that goes along with it, such as the frequency phase plot. And we could therefore check, is this RFI? We have specialist eyes, so the public might think that this is a good candidate, but to a trained pulsar hunter, might be immediately be able to dismiss it.
So the whole project shrunk down the number that the trained specialists had to look at to a manageable chunk.
That's exactly what this is good for. That's exactly what citizen science for pulsar hunting is good at.
So can you talk a little bit about what it was that we've actually found?
So the data that was on pulsar hunters was all from a survey called the High Time Resolution Universe North, which is performed by the Effelsberg Telescope in Germany. There were 200,000 candidates that were uploaded to Pulsar Hunters, and we received over 3 million classifications. So a huge effort by the public. It was amazing to see the response. You've just referred to what we found. So on the show, we discussed the discovery of a pulsar. So this was an independent discovery of pulsar 2045 plus 3633.
It has another nickname.
It does have a nickname to do with a guinea pig.
So what sort of pulsar is this? Is it just a run-of-the-mill common or garden pulsar, or has it got anything particularly interesting about it?
Yeah, so this pulsar is interesting, actually. So it's got a period of 32 milliseconds, and we therefore put it into our MSP, millisecond pulsar, class. But what's really special about this pulsar is that it's actually in a binary system. That means that it's orbiting around another star. We don't know what that other object is yet, but it has a binary period, which means the time for it to go around its orbit once is approximately 32 days.
What day was this pulsar discovered on, out of the three?
So this candidate was flagged, I believe, on the first evening, but it takes a while for, obviously, we were going through a list of ranked candidates. And so on the second day, we'd been through our list and we found this, thanks to the public. And we then did a follow-up on the Wednesday night, which was the second show. So during the filming of the show, there was a follow-up observation of this source. And that's how this turned out to be a real pulsar. I'll just add that this particular candidate was classified by, I think, at least 30 different people. And so thank you to those 30 people specifically, whoever you may be.
I think their names are on the website.
On the website now, there is a link to the actual candidate that turned out to be this real pulsar, along with the names of those people that did classify it.
Would there have always been able to be a live follow-up on the show of the pulsar, or was it quite lucky that this one was where it was in the sky?
It was very lucky that it happened to be in the sky at the time of the show, because obviously the night sky moves around. So it just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Fantastic television.
Yes.
And also on this night, you appeared on the television as well.
I did.
So can you tell us about that?
On the Wednesday, we'd had very little sleep from the night before. We'd been going through all of the comments on the candidates, as well as going through our candidate lists. And so I was asked to be on the show. So during the follow-up, the controller switched the telescope to move to the pulsar. And meanwhile, me and Rene, who set up all of this idea, were in the control room also. And we were, whilst the show was live, we were checking the candidates, more of the candidates, to see if there were any more pulsars in the data.
And were there?
So what the public did was give us this ranked list, and one of those turned out to be this new pulsar. And also there were maybe 10 to 15 more really good candidates that we have been in the process of following up also. They might not turn out to be anything real, but we're going to follow them all up too.
And I'm sure the website will update with any more results as they come.
Yeah, definitely check out the website still. There are results about the discovery, as well as there will be more information.
So is Pulsar Hunters definitely going to be an ongoing thing? Are we going to upload more data from this survey, data from other surveys?
At the moment, that's an unknown, but there is definitely a lot of scope to be done with citizen science for Pulsar Hunters. It might not be with that specific survey. It could be another survey. Other groups around the world could want to do this. So there are other citizen science projects for pulsar hunting around the world. There's one specifically in America with Green Bank Telescope, who actually use schools. So they go around as part of outreach to teach them about pulsars, and as well how to classify them. And they become part of the classification process and discovery process.
So while we were doing this, we were learning ourselves what the most efficient way to classify these pulsars was and what the best way of looking through the candidates was. How would you change what information is presented to the public in the future, or how would you change Pulsar Hunters to make it more efficient? Is there anything that we actually learn while doing this experiment?
Definitely. Pulsar Hunters on Zooniverse was a first. To have pulsar classification on Zooniverse was a first. And so what we gave the public was a limited view of what we would really call a candidate. So I talked about the profile and the time versus phase. There is other data associated with each candidate that we can represent within different figures, which we didn't show the public. And actually what we found by the public discussing individual candidates was that they caught on very quickly to what these plots meant. I was astonished, actually, at the response we got back during the sort of talk, as it's called, on the website.
They began teaching each other.
Exactly, they then teach each other. And so what might be a way forward in the future is to say, well, okay, when you're new to the site, you get what we showed originally, which is the profile and the phase versus time. But then maybe once you get so many classifications right, we then give you an upgraded version and say, okay, now here's the frequency plot too. And then those people that then get those classifications right, we can then say, okay, this is all the data we have about this pulsar. And then they learn and they become our expert classifiers.
So now that the first iteration of Pulsar Hunters is done and completed and was a success, what's your role going to be for the next few weeks or months?
So currently I am in the process of writing up my PhD. So in the immediate future, I will be concentrating mainly on that and hopefully becoming a doctor.
That would be nice.
How far off that are you?
Around 3 months.
Ah, so at time of listening, you'll still be working on it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we can have you back for another interview after you become a doctor.
I can, and I can tell you what I found.
Oh, excellent.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, I just wanted to say also a big thank you to everybody that's listening to this that also went onto the Pulsar Hunters website and classified, because without them, this wouldn't have been possible at all.
Yeah, thank you very much.